The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Tov, yeah, pretty good, thank you, Howard. How about you? I hope you had a good Pesach and you're ready and raring to go after an interesting week away.
It was an absolutely wonderful week away. Look, there were certainly some news events that were horrific. The Sri Lanka church attacks being starting off the week, and then of course ending the week away was the attacks at the Chabad outside San Diego. So just a terrible stuff happening whilst during that time as well.
Unfortunately, this seems to be a trend that we're seeing more and more of. You know, I'm still trying to work out whether anti-Semitism is on the rise or if it was always there and we're just finding that people are more empowered to show it more publicly. I'm not quite sure which of those two.
I'd love to hear your thoughts. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Have we just made it okay? Have we given people, the way in which things have evolved really given people a way to actualize their anti-Semitism? I'd love your thoughts on that. Pesach over. Israelis celebrate, I can't even pronounce it. How do I pronounce it?
Mimuna.
In the tradition. I don't know of Mimuna at all. It certainly doesn't, it's not an Ashkenazi custom, but what is it?
So the great thing about living in Israel is that you get Jews from all over the world who come along and they seem to have their own traditions, their own customs, their own food, of course. It's all about food, isn't it?
For sure.
Which is influenced by, the areas in which they grew up, you know, the parts of the world where, Jews were, sent to in the diaspora. And, you know, one of the examples, of course, is Sigd, the Ethiopian festival that we celebrate and we talk about. And Mimuna is another one, something which we as Jews from Eastern Europe originally don't really know a great deal about. But this is a Moroccan tradition. And Mimuna is celebrated immediately as Pesach comes out, literally. And it is all about the food. It's all about eating chametz, and it's all about eating sweet things, and it's all about celebrating fertility, and it's all about having all types of food which kind of present those traditions. And it's quite common for the Moroccan Jews to dress up in the traditional kind of Moroccan outfits and to have their best crockery and cutlery and gold-plated things on the table. And, of course, the food that goes with it, the sweet food, very, very sweet food, lots of honey, and the so-called mufleta, which is like a pancake kind of thing. Of course, it is chametz. We're loud and proud about being over Pesach. And the mufleta is like a fried sort of pancakey kind of bread that's made on the grill literally during the evening, and people eat it. They normally spread some butter and some honey on it and then kind of roll it up like a cigar and eat it like that. The food is delicious. The opportunity to be seen and to go out and to be with people is of course taken advantage of. It's really all about socializing. It's about getting together. And of course the politicians love to use it for political opportunity to get the photo ops, to get it onto Facebook, to get it onto Instagram, and of course to get it in the press. So you can see and be seen as to whose Mimuna party you're attending.
It's funny because I hadn't really paid much attention to it over the last while, but more and more it has become a social media phenomenon. And last night my social media feeds were filled with this with photos of Mimuna, which was quite interesting.
I think that, you know, anything that allows people to bring their cultural heritage to Israel and to, you know, allow us to experience some of the background that they had. It's a bit like, you know, do you like your knedla hard or soft? It's like, you know, do you prefer the herring to the liver? Well, you know, so we have Mimuna and we
have
other foods that we're being exposed to. And that's a lot of fun. And I think it's a great mixing pot for us to experience the traditions that other Jews bring with them to Israel.
Absolutely. On a more serious note, note, and something I've been contemplating over the last, since I heard the news. Israel has released two Syrians as a goodwill gesture in return for the release of the body of IDF soldier Zachary Baumel, who was missing in action 37 years ago. Was this part of the original deal? Because it almost seems, and in fact the word goodwill gesture means almost that it isn't part of the deal. Just unpack this for us, if you don't mind.
Well, I'm trying to unpack it for myself first, and I'll share some of my thoughts with you. Yeah. Originally, when Zach Baumel's body was returned to Israel, this was an intelligence operation. Okay, it was made quite clear that this was all being done as part of an intelligence operation, that the Israeli security services had been tracking the body, and effectively that the body had almost been stolen with the help of the Russians from Syria and brought to Israel. The Russians, of course, got great plaudits. Prime Minister Netanyahu went off to Moscow to meet with President Putin, receiving personal belongings from Zachary Baumel, which he brought back to Israel for the burial, and he immediately went almost from the airport, having arrived back from Moscow, to the cemetery, to the funeral, to bury the soldier who'd been missing for 37 years and who was finally brought home. So this was really, presented as an intelligence triumph for Israel. Now we see that there's a little bit of a prisoner swap going on, and it's after the event, which seems very strange to me, because in the case of prisoner swaps, it's all very orchestrated. I give you one piece, you give me another piece back, then I give you the third piece, then the fourth piece falls into place, one for one, so that everybody gets whatever has been agreed and nobody can steal whatever doesn't belong to them as part of the prisoner swap. And so this is not the case here, and it makes me wonder whether we're not in the middle of something rather than at the end of something. And what I mean by that is, having kind of stolen the body of Zachary Baumel, which is the way that it was presented, I'm wondering to myself whether the so-called goodwill gesture is not in exchange for something else that we might still get in the future. Because in fact, one could argue that having buried Zach Baumel already a few weeks ago, Israel is not under any obligation to do anything to anybody. Why would we give up things at this stage of the game? It seems a little strange.
Unless, of course, it was a deal with Russia, maybe, that Israel undertook to do something like this.
That's a possibility. That's a possibility. But even so, it makes me wonder whether this is not a goodwill gesture in exchange for which, hopefully, we might get a little bit more. And what could that little bit more be? Well, of course, there's been a lot of talk about Eli Cohen and his body coming back to Israel. It's been in the press recently, denials and rumors and all kinds of things. So it makes me wonder whether that might not be in the making at the moment. And let's not forget the other two IDF soldiers who disappeared at the same time as Zach Baumel, being Tzvi Feldman and Yehuda Katz. The three of them were together, and those two bodies are still unaccounted for. And it makes me wonder whether there might not be a little bit more to the story, not wonder, but perhaps even hope that there might not be a little bit more to the story, and that some more of those Israelis who have been missing in action for way too long now may well be returning home for burial. So at the moment, this is pure speculation. I have absolutely no grounds upon which to base my views and my rumors. It's just pure speculation, because it seems a little strange to me that Israel would now decide to release these two Syrians. It almost looks as if, though, it's part of a deal with the Syrian government, because I don't see that the Russians necessarily would get any advantage from the release of these two Syrians. So it kind of almost looks now like the Syrian government, having been made a fool of to begin with when Zach Baumel's body was taken and buried in Israel, it now looks as if they've come in on the act, and they've perhaps said, well, if you give us a little bit to give us some credibility in this whole action, then we might give you something in return a little bit more. And I certainly hope that that's the case, even though, of course, it is very painful for us to have to release these two Syrians who were serving jail terms in Israel. One was a drug smuggler and was due to be released in the very near future in any event. So one could argue that the cost of that is relatively low. The second person is a slightly higher price to be paying. He is a person who carried out a terror attack in the Golan Heights, tried to carry out, did not actually succeed, but was in the process of carrying out a terror attack in the Golan Heights against an IDF base back in 2005. And he has now been released well short of his planned release date. I think it's a few years before he was due to have been released. He's now been released back to Syria, even though the press, of course, is full of information and a whole long story about the fact that he really wanted to go to Hebron rather than to Syria, that he doesn't have any family left in Syria, but he has a fiance in Hebron, and she's very upset that he's been sent to Syria rather than to Hebron. But be that as it may, the man's out of prison.
So she wasn't really upset by the fact that he was going to become a terrorist and was going to kill somebody.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question. To what extent is he likely to reoffend? You know, we've already seen a lot of statistics about those prisoners, for example, who were released as part of the Gilad Shalit deal, and how many of them went back to reoffend. It's a very high proportion. Certainly, so that, of course, is always the concern.
Kathleen wants to know where have these bodies been kept, and how does Israel actually know that they are the correct bodies?
So it's not been revealed exactly where the bodies were kept, but my understanding is that they probably were buried somewhere. And in fact, there was some talk about the fact that Zach Baumel's body was moved around, even that it wasn't kept in one place for fear of the fact that Israel was onto it and that they might come in and pick up the bodies. So I'm expecting that the bodies were probably buried somewhere under some close scrutiny. How does Israel know that these are the bodies? The first thing that happened when Zach Baumel's body was returned to Israel is that it was taken off to the Forensic Institute in Israel, where the DNA tests were conducted. And of course, all of the IDF soldiers will have those that are missing in action, DNA samples of their family members will be kept on file somewhere, so that in the event that their bodies can be finally found again, in order to conduct a positive identification, they will do that DNA test. And they did it very, very quickly indeed. Between the time that the body landed in Israel and it was taken off to Jerusalem for burial, they managed to do a positive identification using DNA. These days, all IDF soldiers who are recruited into the army on the first day that they are recruited will give a DNA sample, which will be kept on file. And that DNA sample will, God forbid, be used in the event that it needs to be used to identify the body if necessary. So that's already something that the IDF has taken on as part of their regular process in order to be able to, unfortunately, have to identify bodies in the case that they need
All right. We don't have much time, but I do want to talk about the people lighting the independence torches for Yom HaTzmaut. Apparently, they've been revealed against a backdrop of controversy. Tell us about this.
Well, first of all, it's a great honor to have Morris Kahn as one of those people who has been chosen to light the independence torches next week. Of course, a former South African immigrant in Israel many, many years, who has made massive, massive contributions to the state of Israel, and most recently was the man, the finance behind the recent attempt to land on the moon. And he has promised that even though that landing unfortunately didn't go according to plan in the final stages as the lunar module approached the moon, he has promised that that is not the end of the story, and that we will try again, and that Israel will succeed in landing a lunar module on the moon. So Morris Kahn has been one of those people who's been chosen, along with Kfir Damari, who they worked together with on this attempt to land on the moon. They will light a torch, an independence torch, together. But of course, there are 16 people all in all who have been chosen to light torches. There are 13 torches, and there's a group. There's some of them will be in groups, like, for example, Morris Kahn, but also the three mothers of the boys, Rachel Frankel, Bat Galim Sher, and Iris Yifrach, the three teenage boys who were killed back in 2014. Their mothers will light one torch together as well. They've been chosen to do so, not only because of their suffering that they've had to go through in losing their sons, but of course in the way that they've overcome that tragic loss and really made it a positive contribution, really done something positive out of it. So they're being recognized. And there are, of course, many, many other people coming from all walks of life, people who, an IDF soldier who was critically injured and went back to the IDF, even though he's in a wheelchair, and really has been an inspiration. People from culture, from sport, from agriculture, from health, from all kinds of walks of life, who will be lighting the candle, a singer, and you know, just many, many interesting people. And of course, a representative from the diaspora as well. The representative from the diaspora will be Jeffrey Finkelstein, who was the president of the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh. Unfortunately, that Pittsburgh event is in the news again with the tragic shooting over the weekend in San Diego or near San Diego. So Jeffrey Finkelstein will represent the diaspora jury, but lots and lots of controversy because a recent report has been published by the comptroller who says that the way in which torch lighters have been chosen, not only this year but in previous years, is not according to the rules, and that the committee has been overruled. There's a special committee that's put together who has the responsibility to decide who will be the torch lighters. And in fact, the comptroller's reports has been very critical of Minister of Culture Mary Regev, who he says overruled the committee and appointed people to light torches, even though the committee had considered those individuals and rejected them for one reason or another. Wow. And nonetheless, they were then given the right to light the torch. So unfortunate controversy, but we will celebrate Yom HaTzmaut next week, come what may. And of course, those people will get the kavod that they need.
And of course, it wouldn't be Israel if there wasn't some controversy over something like even who lights the torch. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always for the Israel Report. We'll chat to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good one. It is 8:01. Apologies that the news is slightly late. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9 High FM. A very good morning.